It's episode 678 of the Locked On Rangers podcast. On today's show, I'm joined by Grant Schiller to talk all things low A and high A as their seasons are done, some encouraging things he's seen, and a local double A pitcher who's absolutely crushing it and needs to be discussed. All that and more on this episode of Locked On Rangers. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Rangers, your daily Texas Rangers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are locked onto the Texas Rangers. I'm Bryce Patrick, a cripplingly addicted Texas Rangers fan since 2010, founder and host for all four seasons of this Locked On Rangers podcast. Today is Thursday, September 15th, and your Rangers are, well, if this result stands and the Rangers actually get a one-run win, the Rangers will be 63-80 and therefore physically incapable of having a 100-loss season. Joining me today is the longtime, very often time, not nearly as often as we'd like, time guest, Grant Schiller, the OG. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I am good. The Rangers might end up sweeping a series with 2 one-run games, which seems absolutely impossible, and guaranteed they're not going to lose 100 games. So everyone can say, oh, well, it's the same thing, saying whatever. No, not at least, at worst, 99 loss season if this result holds in an inning, one more full inning. They're in the bottom of the eighth right now. But we're here today to talk about some minor league baseball. Grant is a prospect encyclopedia. I know I say that about our own Locked On MLB prospects, Lindsey Crosby, but the term applies to Grant Schiller and specifically a Rangers prospect encyclopedia. We're here to talk about low A and high A. Low A, for the most part, I didn't look as closely at it because for the most part, there weren't a whole lot of guys in my top 30 there, but there have been some surprises and some noteworthy guys in low A. And now that their season has come to an end, who are some of the guys with the old Down East Wood Ducks that stood out the most to you so far?
Yeah, it was a really young team down there this year. So the Nuggets weren't the best, but it was a team that had a lot of interesting, kind of like you were saying, not necessarily top 30 guys, but interesting further down prospects. And there were a few guys who had much better second halves than first halves, which is what you would hope for from guys who are too young for their level, is that they adjust and they improve, and that happens throughout the season. So, I mean, offensively, the guy who really performed the best there all year was Alejandro Osuna. And he ended up in Hickory. He's not a guy I've seen much of, so I don't have much to comment on there. But Yosi Gallon kind of played to form. Lots of power, lots of strikeouts, 299 OBP. So we'll see how that goes along, if he's able to rein in the negatives a little bit as he moves along. I wouldn't expect him to, but there's tools, so you'll see. Maximo Acosta had a pretty good year for his age and for what he is. Long bases, he was acceptable at the plate, nothing special, but he's also, as with many of these guys, very young.
Yeah, with him, level, with him, I think I had him, like, I think he cracked my top 30 before the season. Maybe, I think it was right there towards the bottom, but of these guys, he was the, like, most well-known guy. I mean, Cam Colley was also a guy who had, like, a little bit of notoriety, but most of these other guys, like, lower down, who did not, I'm looking as I'm sorting by OPS, that played, like, you know, fewer than 10 games, these youngsters. And also one with a great name. I remember us talking about it in our random episode from like 2 years ago about projecting these guys who we knew literally nothing about because COVID kept people from actually going and seeing them and actually writing anything about them. Old Zion Bannister, the switch hitting, I believe, infielder, who's 21 years old out of the Bahamas. I love me a Zion.
Of course. Well, I don't know who doesn't.
I'm pretty sure Jeff Banser was a time when he was actually signed out of the Bahamas. So we're like, a cousin, a nephew, no relation. But some of the guys that I was impressed with them getting any time at all there were some of the guys who kind of snuck into they're right at the bottom of my top 30 in the midseason in Glider Figueroa and Daniel Cueva, who, you know, didn't perform well, but had 6 and 5 games under the belts. Were you surprised at all to see them get up to this level?
You know, I mean, yes and no. Like, they're not ready for the level. I mean, Figueroa turned 18 during the season. I think Cueva turned 19 during the season.
Yason Morabell also would,
they're both 18,
would qualify on this.
Yes. Morabell also came up. He may have been the one who just turned 18 or 19. But either way, I mean, they're all so young. They weren't necessarily ready for the level, but they had very good Arizona League seasons. They honestly, all three of those are prospects that I love. Those three and what I've heard about Gutierrez, it's a pretty exciting group that was at the ACL this year. And so when that season ended, they gave these guys, a week or two more of games, which is awesome. Get them used to the level they'll probably be at next year.
Remind me of Gutierrez, Anthony Gutierrez, right?
Yes. That's right.
He's not on here though, right? Am I
right? Yeah. He didn't make it up. He started in the Dominican League and, came over stateside to the Arizona League in his first year, actually, which says a lot.
Oh yeah, because he crushed it in that Dominican League. He's real youngster and put up a lot of really great numbers. Was he the guy who I'm thinking of that was from Venezuela and trained in the Dominican? There was one prospect that was on my top 30 that had a similar situation like that. There was some other guy who I can't remember exactly who it was, completely drawing a blank right now, and some other. I think it was the right fielder for Eloy Jimenez, I think, that also did that.
Mm, okay.
But I can't remember exactly who it was, so I don't want to speculate. Might have been Morabell, honestly. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
But yeah, this is definitely better than I expected from these guys. There were some guys who were just like kind of interesting names that I wanted to keep an eye on that like did, you know, like fine. Mahler wasn't super great. I didn't
really hear... good second half though.
Okay, that's good. But I didn't hear the greatest things defensively, which was a bummer because, you know, his profile was a lot going to matter because he's a catcher. He was the, fourth or fifth round pick from 2021, fourth round pick in 2021 out of Iowa. Evan Grant did a whole feature about like the just ridiculous lack of black catchers, and he is a black catching prospect. And I thought that would be really cool if they could have, you know, one full-time black catcher in the major leagues for the first time since like 2004 or whatever, just something insane. But Cam Colley, the offensive numbers don't look super great, but you know, he's also really young. And same with JoJo Blackman, was another guy that I was keeping an eye on who's got some like crazy speed. Marcus Smith was the other one that I was keeping an eye on who had just like some crazy tools of like power and speed. And well, the on-base looks nice, but everything else doesn't really look that great.
Oh yeah, his season was weird as hell. So
Raiders had a few of those guys with like, you know, really low, like, well, I guess it was just the two of them that were the corner outfielders in high A that kind of figured out how to hit for power, but still some of them still had the low batting average but the high on base, which, you know, I can, at this level, I can definitely live with.
I'm not sure Marcus Smith took the bat off his shoulders all year because he had a 17% walk rate and 42% strikeout rate.
Oh,
they go with 47 stolen bases.
That's that is a 3-2 outcome where the third outcome is a stolen base.
Right.
That's definitely a wild, wild season. But there is one name that I really want to get to, a very, very fascinating pitching prospect that didn't really catch my eye until the end of the season. But first, this episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your pro and college football betting needs and sports info this season. If you want to bet on Grant's Texas A&M Aggies, well, you should probably make some better choices financially. But you can definitely do that. You can find all the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts, including this year's opening week's games. Those weeks are now done. They also have the second week's games, too. If you saw what happened with the Cowboys and you're feeling good about that and you want to bet on them, you know, maybe don't. But you can go bet on something else. They got the fastest and easiest way to check out all your favorite sports and events, including Major League Baseball, MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action, because BetOnline is where the game starts. Now, I did a expert television tease about the most fascinating, weird, and just downright bonkers pitching prospect. That's, of course, Emiliano Teodoro, the guy who's got a fastball that sits in the upper 90s to 100s and a curveball that's actually better than that, not velocity-wise, but he's throwing that one for strikes, and it's, you know, a 90-mile-an-hour curveball. What have you heard about this guy? What piques your interest about this guy other than, like, those two just super weird facts?
No, I mean, that's about it. Is he's got a fastball that'll touch 101 plus and has some good giddy-up and ride to it. And he's got an absolute hammer of a curve, like over 3,000 RPM, just filthy curve. Like, I mean, those two pitches are disgusting.
For reference, a 3,000 RPM on a curve, what kind of curve? Is that like a Kershaw curveball, like that kind of level?
Well,
not it, quite.
No, I don't know there's much that's quite a Kershaw curveball, and the RPM isn't the only factor, but it means that it has a lot of tumble. Pitch that has a ton of depth.
Okay.
So, I mean, he's filthy. I actually saw him last fall when they did their college series, which I really hope they do again, by the way.
Yeah, that would be really nice.
And he was not somebody I'd heard of, and I came away very interested. And he's a relief prospect. Like, he started this year, but he's a relief prospect.
He is going deep into games, which is something that I found interesting, because it seems like he can't really locate the fastball. But I mean, if the changeup was anything more than just it's there, then I think you'd say, okay, I see you sticking with this guy as a starter. But I mean, is that something you think that, I mean, I know changeup's pretty hard to develop. Is there, like, you thinking they might teach him a slider? Do you think, how long are they going to commit to this guy as a starting pitcher? Because, like, I mean, they did the same thing with Natale Feliz. He was a starter, all through his minor league career until they brought him up and made him a ridiculously dominant bullpen starter?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm all on board with them keeping him a starter through AA, at least. The thing with him is he's just going to come down to how much his fastball command improves and how many strikes he can throw. So give him as many innings as he can to figure that out. If he's starting and getting 90 innings a year, that gives him more opportunities to improve on those things than if he's coming out of the pen and throwing 40 a year.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And, you know, for the year, he finished up with 22 games, 17 of those were starts, 84 and a third innings, allowed 44 walks, so about more than an inning, a walk every other inning, and 115 strikeouts with a 3.09 ERA. What just a bonkers freaking line that I am fascinated by. Thankfully, he played a couple games on MILB TV, so we could at least see some of the highlights. Granted, they were very, you know, grainy and shot on a 2004 camera phone, but it's still better than nothing. And that curveball, there was someone, one of the listeners who was at the game, and he's like, I just saw what I think is a curveball at 90 miles an hour. Like, but it looked like a curveball. And I'm like, no, that must be his changeup. And then I listened to the Diamond Pod, and they're like, no, he's got a 90-mile-an-hour curveball. And I went back and found the guy. I was like, no, I was wrong. That was a curveball. I just didn't think that they could do they made curveballs that did that.
They don't.
There's one guy in the major leagues that, like, throws a 90-mile-an-hour curveball who is a reliever, and I can't think of his name or where I saw him. Just like, oh, someone else did that. And instead of my brain being useful and being like, oh, let's remember that name, where that guy is he right-handed or just any other details, it's like, nope, there's another guy, I don't know who it is, but there is someone out there. So if you want to go check my references, or if my crazy brain just made that up, feel free to go do your own research on that. But there were a couple other really solid breakout guys in this level, a couple of lefties that I didn't know a whole lot about, but I ended up being pretty impressed with what they did. That includes, not a left-hander, but a former second-round pick, Ryan Garcia, who crushed it, got a promotion, Mitch Bratt, Larson Kendrick. Is it Kendrick or Kendrich? Because it's written Kendrich, but I've heard it pronounced Kendrick.
I've always said Kendrick, but I don't know if that is accurate.
I am saying Kendrick, and if I'm wrong, I am very sorry to Larson and your family.
Winston Santos, too.
Okay.
He ate a lot of innings, and he's good fastball, good command of it. I know in the spring the secondaries weren't great, so that's where he needs to improve. I don't know. I didn't hear any reports on whether that happened, but the numbers were good. and he's an interesting guy. Mitch Bratt, yes, a guy I'm excited to see. A really good season. I don't have much more on him other than he's considered to be a legitimate guy, and he had good numbers. Ryan Garcia is just good to see
him. He also worked a whole lot this year, Mitch Bratt did. He had a 2.45 ERA in 19 games. 18 of those were starts. 80 and two-thirds innings. 28 walks and 99 strikeouts. Love seeing those. Those are always what I look at, is like kind of the FIP numbers, for especially at these lower levels. Sometimes they can get a little overinflated, but usually if you got a lot of walks at this level, you really got an issue, because these guys just do not want to swing at any breaking stuff. So that's why I think Emiliano Teodoro is able to have so much success, and why, you know, people were thinking, well, he's got all these great numbers in low A. Yeah, it's low A. These kids aren't that advanced, and it'll get a lot harder as he gets up if he cannot command that fastball in the zone. But yeah, who was the other one that I just said? Kendrick Garcia. Didn't pitch all that much. Kendrick. Oh yeah, Garcia. Yeah, Garcia is a former second round pick. Why has he not pitched all these years? It feels like he was drafted a while ago. Was it just like a rash of injuries? Let's see. The second round pick in 2019. He is 24 and he was drafted out of college, out of UCLA.
There's been a lot of them. I mean, that was obviously the COVID year, but I'm not 100% certain, but I want to say it was thoracic outlet syndrome and
Gosh, that is a heck of a combo. Not in a good way. Gosh, the Rangers really do keep getting these thoracic outlet syndrome guys. I mean,
if I'm right.
If you're right. I know it's at least Tommy John. I can't remember. I think I remember hearing about the thoracic outlet syndrome surgery, but a guy who the Rangers really like. That 2019 draft, as I keep looking back at it, like, it's looking really, really great, especially at the top end with Josh Jung and Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson that the Orioles took in the second round, plus Corbin Carroll for the Diamondbacks, who, before he got, like, 2 weeks before he got called up, ESPN ranked him the number one overall prospect in baseball. That guy's got some really loud tools. So, and Josh Jung has already proven some really loud tools as well. And the Rangers about to give up a tying run. Yep, and there we go. The Rangers are bound and determined to play in so many of these one-run games. Good Lord. We'll see if they walk it off behind me. You can hear me freaking out. But I feel like overall with this level, I didn't have a lot of expectations. And for the most part, they impressed me a lot more than I thought they would. Is that your fault as well?
Yeah, I mean, again, such young guys down at this level this year. They're really aggressive with their assignments, but you saw growth from a lot of them, and there's just a lot of, not necessarily top prospects, but interesting prospects.
There definitely were a whole lot of those. Let's get into the good stuff, the high A. There are some guys who have graduated high A who you have seen, who I don't think we have talked about together on this podcast, Aaron Zavala, and now Evan Carter, a double A player, who I don't know if he DH'd again today, if he's just going to be DH'ing for the next, you know, four games or whatever, unless Frisco makes the playoffs. But he did DH in his debut, had a walk, went 0-for-2, and also had a hit-by-pitch. So I have 500 on base in his one game. And Aaron Zavala, who, after a freakish start, has come back down to earth just a smidge. The OPS is now down under 1,000. But I know you and I, when we talked, we were at the game, we both really liked what we saw from him.
Yeah, This is on Zavala. Apologies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Him and Acuna both came up at the same time, and both of them I really liked. Pretty quickly, I put a roll 5 on both of them as future big league starters.
Wow. And
Acuna's got such a good feel for the strike zone. He's got such a keen eye for spin, where he's able to hit all pitches, which is not something that everybody's able to do, especially in double A. And he's just got such a balanced but quick swing. So he's not necessarily going to have the loft to hit a ton of home runs. He's probably at 13, 14, 15 on the year. That feels about right for a projection. But he's going to put the bat on a lot of baseballs. He's going to sting them on the line. And he's going to draw a hell of a lot of walks. So he's probably a left fielder defensively. But the on-base tool and the hit tool.
Zavala, that is?
Yeah. are.
Oh, I was like, I thought you moved on to Acuña. I was like, left field. That literally came out of left field.
Acuña up the middle. Yeah. Great defender. Hits the ball pretty hard. Puts together good at bats. Can be a little over aggressive right now, but I'm okay with that at the moment. Because he does have the ability to pick up spin himself. He does have the ability to draw walks himself. So I think there's going to be enough in the bat to let the.
So you think Zavala is going to stick at about. Zavala is right now at 16 home runs. Acuña is at 11. Do you think, how much power do you think Zavala is going to develop? I know it took him a while to actually show that. He had like just the ridiculous on base. He still has the ridiculous on base at AA, and the power is showing just a little bit more. But that was one of the things that I think you were definitely worried about when you saw him while he was, I still think, was recovering from that injury last fall. And it was something that I worried about until like he had a crash of, like, I'm pretty sure he hit all of his 11 home runs in like a 20 game stretch or something, but it was like it really just like completely flipped a switch. Same with his AA home runs as well, hit them all in bunches right at the beginning.
Yeah, so you're right. When I've seen him a couple times prior, and I was less impressed when he was still recovering from the back then. So he just was not as explosive, didn't have as much juice, bat speed in there. It really, the question of how much power's in there really comes down to how much does he want to be in there? Because he has legitimate raw power. In batting practice, he'll clear the lazy river. It's in there when he wants to get in there and turn and burn and really lift the ball. But his general swing doesn't have a lot of loft. He's more of a low line drive guy, which is fine, but it's going to limit the
So a little bit of the, you know, 2021 Nathaniel Lowe disease, I want to call it. He has since fixed that and made me look very stupid for saying he's never going to show it. I think both of us were both on the why the heck are you trading for Nathaniel Lowe at this point. Mea culpa on that one. Thank you for. I'm happy to look dumb on that one. Very happy to. But we definitely looked dumb on that one. But I agree. He's very, very professional batter. Probably not going to be anything, you know, fantastic in the outfield, but you know, he's in left. He can provide some offensive value, which the Rangers haven't really gotten from their left fielders for the most part this year until Bubba Thompson started getting on base at like a 320, 330 clip and stealing a base every freaking chance he could. Which, by the way, how impressed are you with Bubba and what he's doing at the big league level? Because I did not see this coming, and I'm so happy for him.
Yeah, I really thought he was going to be a guy who really struggled when he got to like kind of get eaten up by breaking balls, by changeups, not being able to pick up spin or off speed, and that hasn't been the case. Like, there's still plenty he needs to work on if he's going to hold down a major league roster spot, much less an everyday job, but it's been a brighter start than I expected, and speed certainly helps.
Yeah, he has got some crazy speed, but I definitely got us off track of the Hickory Hammerers. Have you seen much of Trevor Hover? Speaking of guys with those weird lines of like the crazy on base and some power numbers, but not a whole lot of average. Have you seen much of him? And what I know he's got the similar thing going that he did in Hickory. In Hickory, he had a slash line of 217, 376. 413 with 13 bombs, and I think it's kind of similar what he's doing in terms of his slash line numbers at AA Frisco.
Yeah, I've seen a game of him, not enough to really have a strong opinion. I liked what I saw in the spring from the at the plate, but I mean, from what you hear, he's a DH masquerading in a couple positions, so he's got to really hit, and he hasn't. Like, he's hit this year, but not enough to clear that bar. Next year's going to be a very important year for him to.
To be fair, in 53 at bats, he does have a 936 OPS in Frisco, and on base, a 427, slugging 509. But still, it is a small sample size.
Right. On the year, larger sample is good, not outstanding. And the bat probably needs to be outstanding. But man, he's almost 20% of the time. So if he can and really low this, well, the numbers are just held down by bad batted ball luck. man, I didn't realize. I mean, he is literally walking 20% of his plate appearances.
Yeah, and that's striking out nuts.
Not that much more than that. That is crazy.
Yeah, and I was really encouraged by that. And hold on, but no, I'm in. Dang it, I keep thinking that I'm clicking on Hickory stats and I'm clicking on Frisco stats. And I'm like, wait a minute, why is the only pitcher among qualifiers in Hickory Cody Bradford? But it's not. Tecola Roby is a guy who I had a lot of high expectations on. I think I had him a little lower than you had before the season. The overall numbers don't look that great. But Ricky Finasco is another guy who kind of had a similar situation. And from what I've heard, he's had a better second half. And I completely missed it, but Ricky Finasco got promoted Double A.
Yeah.
Is that something that you saw coming?
Well, it's kind of like the Glader, Figueroa, and Yaquavo, Gason, Mortebel promotions. In that, no, like he wasn't really ready for both the Double A. We'll have a minor league rules work now. ACL ends 2 weeks before Low A and High A, which both end a week before Double A, which ends a week before Triple A. So just guys they want to see get more action, they bump up. Finasco, they want to get another start. He's going to be in Double A next year. They bumped him up for another start. I was not able to make it after that one, unfortunately. But yes, he did have a better second half. He just got to be more consistent mechanically, got to be more consistent with his command. He walked 47 and 84 innings, gave 12 home runs. A lot of guys, but you cannot both be home run prone and walk prone in the major league and succeed. You just can't. Unless you're striking out 15, 16 guys per nine, which that's very, very, very difficult to do. Only a few elite guys can do that.
Yeah, and looking at these TK Roby numbers, they're better than I thought. They're especially on the walk rate. The walk rate was really bad early, but it seems like it improved a whole lot as the season went on. And the strikeout numbers have been there, and the ERA went down a little bit as well. And two starts in September, he had a sub-2 ERA. His ERA was sub-4 in the month of July and August, and the walk rate seems like it went down quite a bit in those outings as well, or in those months. He only had one walk and two starts in September.
Yeah, I mean, he just gave up too many home runs. But that was an aggressive assignment for him, too. He's 20.
Yeah.
So it's been a full year in high A and handled himself fairly well.
I keep forgetting that, like, I gave Evan Carter all the props in the world for being 20 and dominating at high A, but I feel like I should have been doing the same thing with TK Roby. It went out of my mind because I thought, no, they didn't put him at high A. I just kind of like just it went out of my mind. The last start that he had at high A was absolutely fantastic. He went 5 innings, allowed 3 hits, 1 unearned run, just 1 walk, and 12 strikeouts in 5 innings. That's some nice stuff. That'll play.
That will certainly play.
Maybe you're right. Maybe I was too low on him. I probably was, but you know, are there any other high A pitchers that you want to touch on? There wasn't a whole lot. Ryan Garcia did come up and make a couple of outings for high A. I think, again, that was probably just another case of they wanted to see him a little bit more. We saw Mark Church a little bit. Mason Englert, a guy that you got some eyes on, had a decent season in high A and made his Double A debut. Were you able to attend? And if so, what'd you see?
I was, and I was, more impressed than I expected, honestly. I mean, to refer back to spring training again, that's a place where stuff plays more than pitchability, command, feel for the game on the mound, just because some of that's ratcheted down by being rusty, just working your way back into the season, and it's harder to see in a 1 or 2 inning spring training stint, whereas if you throw 100 with a nasty slider, you can see that in 3 pitches.
Yeah. Yeah, you can see that. You can see Emiliano Teodoro in 3 pitches.
Right. So Englert in the spring, it was like, okay, he's 91-93 with the fastball. Like, he's fine. Kind of disappointing. Seeing him in season in a full start, it was pretty impressive. He's a tall guy. He really gets down the mound, so he cuts down some of the distance between his release and the plate. He's got 4 pitches, all of which are usable. Fastball, slider, curveball, changeup. Fastball, as I said, is 91-93, has a little bit of run. Honestly, the shape and the velocity don't seem that spectacular. But on that start, he generated 8 swinging strikes with the pitch. So that's something I want to track, kind of see how.
Oh, he had 8 swinging strikes. He had eight strikeouts, so they were all with 2 strikes. That's impressive.
Oh no, just on the fastball, he had 8
Oh strikes. Wow, that's really nice.
Yeah, so I want to see how hitters continue to react and read that pitch to see if, for some reason, it plays better than the eye test would tell us. The slider is decent. It's an average, fringe average pitch. He spotted it well. He had good all of his pitches. He got swinging strikes with that. The curveball I probably like better. It flashed probably above average. Big two-plane super breaker. Changeup was hell on lefties. The 7 plays out the fastball a long way. He threw it 11 times and got 6 swinging strikes.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, it ate up lefties. So none of the pitches are plus probably, but they're all between a 45 to 55, meaning below average to above average. And he commanded them all. He had good pitchability. He knew what to use, when to use it, where to use it. And he's had success doing this. I honestly, I think he's a guy who you're probably going to want to pull after 18 batters before guys get too comfortable with his repertoire, and probably are able to sit on some stuff the third time around since it's not truly elite stuff. But he's a guy who can probably come up to the big leagues in a couple years and be an 18-batter starting pitcher, which I was pretty impressed.
That's pretty nice for a, what, 9th-round pick?
Fourth round
pick from 2018.
D-load guy, though.
Okay.
D-load program.
Yeah, I talked with Tep about this on Twitter, and he seemed to think that he wasn't going to add any more velocity. And, you know, he is, what, 6'4"? Is that something you agree with?
There's a little bit more.
He is 22, so
right.
He's not, that young anymore.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit more strength he could add to the legs. Maybe you could add a tier 2, but nothing much.
Okay. So he's not going to just, explode for, another add 3 to 4 miles an hour on his velo of the fastball?
Yeah, I would not expect that from him. And if he did, it's probably because he's changing some things mechanically that would put his risk and hurt his command, which would hurt the overall profile.
Hmm. Okay.
So.
Well, that's good to know.
Hopefully he doesn't pull us and go that route.
Oh, gosh. Too soon, man. Too soon. Well, this is definitely encouraging high A and low A season that I didn't have huge expectations for. I did for Evan Carter, and he lived up to those and surpassed those. For those two guys in Trevor Hover and Aaron Zavala that I didn't have huge expectations for, both of them blew what I was expecting out of the water. That was really nice to see. And, also good to see Luis Angel Acuna come up to double A, and I'm really happy to hear your evaluation. I'd heard some less flattering ones of him, but I liked what I saw, and I'm glad that you, being much smarter about baseball, also like what you saw. That makes me feel even better about confirming my suspicions of me actually knowing a thing or two about baseball. But one thing that I really do know about baseball, for those of you who are new listeners, Grant and I do this all the time. We wrap up with our random ranger. We just go and pick anyone who, I guess by our own rules, we didn't really set them, but we've made them as we go along. They just have to be on the big league roster for one day. They don't even have to play a game. I can't remember who it was that you brought out that had just been on the roster for a day and then never played again for the Rangers.
Eliezer Alvarez.
Gosh, that was a great pull. But I have a half decent pull. A guy who is no longer in the big leagues, who was actually initially drafted by the Expos in the 47th round of the 2001 Major League Baseball draft. He is a right-handed pitcher. He pitched for 3 Major League seasons. In 2007, he pitched for the Florida Marlins. In 2010, he pitched for the Oakland A's. And in 2013, he pitched for the Texas Rangers. Started 3 games, finished off 10 in 22 total games, 47 2/3 innings. 21 whole strikeouts, 15 walks, 5 dingers, and a 4.15 ERA, an ERA plus of exactly 100, exactly average, and he had a WAR of 0.2, so just about as mid as you can get. this guy was on the 2013 Texas Rangers. Can you name this guy?
Was he, do you know, was he a minor league free agent signing, or was he acquired via another method?
Let me scroll down and see. Signed as a free agent with the Texas Rangers. Oh, that's the last thing. He signed with the Texas Rangers in 2015. Yeah. Was granted free agency in 2015 as well. At the end of the season. Let's see. 2013, signed as a free agent with the Rangers. Didn't say minor league, just said free agent. And it must have been minor league signing in 2015 because he didn't play that year. He didn't play in the big leagues that year. I love that he kept on having like 3 years in between. They also played for the Florida Marlins and was drafted by the Expos. That's a fun little fact about him. I'll give you another hint. He went to Wabash Valley College in Mount Carmel, Illinois. Does that help?
No, but that's a good program. this is gonna bother me, but I don't even have a guess.
Ross Wolf.
Yes. Okay.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Ross Love me Wolf. Some Wolfie.
Wow.
He pitched a lot that season. Like I felt like me remembering him was like, that's weird that I remember it. But he pitched nearly 50 innings that year. That was such a weird team. The 2013 team really has some like gems on it.
Yeah, and it was a good team too. Played in 163.
Uh huh. They did. Just such a weird year.
That's a good pull.
Thank you. Thank you. I feel good about it.
I'm impressed. I'm gonna go with somebody a little bit more recent. He is currently in AAA with the San Francisco Giants. He pitched for the Rangers in 2019, threw 5.2 innings in four games out of the bullpen, had a 3.18 ERA. Maybe not fully deserved given the 7.79 expected ERA, but again, it's a tiny sample. He did, he walked five in two innings, only struck out two. This is probably the only clue that might give you any chance here. He was acquired in 2018 from the Arizona Diamondbacks in exchange for Jake Diekman.
No. I'm trying to do this without cheating and looking at Baseball Reference because I was actually doing the show then. So I was more, even more in the everyday, day to day. Oh my gosh.
Really good changeup.
I can't think of his name. I can vaguely picture his face, and this picture is like, it's reminding me. I know who this is, and I'm gonna hate myself for it. But who is it?
It is Wei J. Wong.
Oh no, I knew Wei J. Wong. Oh my god, because I remember I freaked out so. It was my first year podcasting, and Morgan and I like freaked out. I'm like, how the heck do you say this name? Oh, Wei J. Wong. What a guy.
Wei J.
Spelled what a pull.
Yeah. Chieh.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. I've fretted over that for so long. Man, he pitched more innings than almost as many as Locke St. John and Johan Diaz.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Two of the greats. Of And I see old Peter Fairbanks on there, which reminds me, I did do a crossover with Locked On Rays. We talked about that Pete Fairbanks trade. We talked about the Nathaniel Lowe trade. That'll be in your feeds on Friday morning. Some great stuff there. But we do not have any Taiwanese pitcher talk. No Wei J. Wong talk, which I can't believe. There's not that many guys that have been in the major leagues at all. Wei J is one of not very many, the 16 players total. Let's see, 16 batters and 13 pitchers. The most frequently is Wei Yin Chen.
Mm, yep.
So
that checks out.
And Yu Chang is the most played position player with, well, I guess the highest WAR, highest OPS. Yeah, a 0.41 WAR. Wow. Wait, no.
That sucks.
It has Wei Yin Chen as 8.2 career WAR. Okay, so there is somebody who is doing something. Qin Min Wong also had a 12.52 WAR back in from 2005 to 2016. Huh. Interesting. So, little Taiwanese baseball history for you that you did not think you'd be getting in this podcast. Man, don't tell them that we don't bring you some Taiwanese baseball history, because we bring it. Not every episode, but we bring it good.
I mean, if you don't get it the next episode or the one after, just keep waiting, because it's coming.
Just keep waiting for Wei J. Wong talk, because it's coming every once in a while. Honestly, that might be the best. Like, there's been so many good ones that we pulled out.
Man, we've had some good names on here. You know who I almost went with today is Dallas Keuchel, because he was here 2 weeks ago and he already is so forgettable.
I need to start writing these down so I can have a list of these guys. This has inspired me that this one specifically needs to be remembered. I'm probably going to go through just all these different random Rangers baseball references and just look at the random ones that like have like a click through link, like, all right, we got that one. That was one of our guys. But as always, this is an absolute pleasure. Grant, where can the fine folks listening to Locked On Rangers find you and your work?
They can find me at Baseball Prospectus.
Darn right they can.
Yeah, just followed Mason Englert and Dustin Harris in the last 10 pack. Just 350 words on each of them up on the site, and getting to work on the prospect rankings here for the Rangers.
Nice. So you're gonna have Evan Carter as number one overall. You're gonna push for that, right?
Well, so here's the thing: the top five overall in the game. It's Young, it's Leiter, it's Carter, it's White, it's Acuna, it's Zabala in some form or fashion. It's just a matter of figuring out where.
Oh, I meant overall in the entire.
Right, no, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah. All right, good. Yeah. And you know, with these guys, I don't know, what is your official, you know, y'all's official stance of like, once they lose rookie eligibility, that's when they're off the prospect list?
Yeah.
Okay, so Young is still going to be able to be on there. Gunnar Henderson and Corbin Carroll are still going to be able to be on there. But we all know that Josh Young's better. No Adley Rutschman or Julio Rodriguez to fight with. So that's good news. Because that was going to be tough competition, help. Even for them.
That does help. But yeah, I mean, just stay tuned. Daniel Cueva, number one overall.
Oh my gosh, what a poll that will be. I'm thinking in November or January I might end up doing my rankings, just because that time gets so bored and we can fight about whatever baseball or BP's rankings are versus mine then, so that I have something else to talk about in the months of January. But we still have some baseball. The Rangers ended, and I did not see what happened. I just saw they gave up the lead in the top of the ninth, so I guess you'll have to wait till Monday's episode to figure out what happened if you do not watch any baseball. But Grant, thank you so much for joining me. Y'all, thank you so much for listening and subscribing. And until next time, don't forget to enjoy baseball.